What we're talking about is late night, early morning low clouds. With a chance of fall, chance of showers in the afternoon. With variable high cloudiness, gusty winds at times around that corner of Sunset and Alvarado. Yeah, I know, things are tough all over. When the thunderstorms start increasing over the southeast and south central portions of my apartment, I get upset. And a line of thunderstorms was developing in the early morning hours ahead of a slow-moving cold front.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connection's Thursday edition. Today is the 11th day of May, 2006. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith, and it's great to have you here on another broadcast of this most important of shows, the French Connection. IamTheWitness.com is the website, and IamTheWitness at Hotmail.com is the connection to me. We, as usual, always try to find really important interviews to try to forward the research that we do on the French Connection. And as you well know, my partner, Eric Huffschmidt, has worked really hard at trying to expose the 9/11 conspiracy. And we also work on many other subjects, as you also know. But this particular subject has a lot of twists and turns in it. My guest today that we're going to be talking with, Christopher Bolin, has looked into many of the anomalies that 9/11 has brought forward. I mean, we've seen things about Logan Airport in question. We've seen things about the 93 in question. Well, of course, the buildings themselves coming down and how that was all done. All of these things are stink terrible, ladies and gentlemen. And what we're going to do today is bring up a new item. Actually, it's been posed before, but I don't think anybody has looked into it quite the way Christopher Bolin has in this most recent article he's going to be publishing on American Free Press. So let's bring him up right now and talk to Christopher. Chris, are you with me?
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me all right?
I sure do, Chris. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good. You know, the last time we worked on some stuff, we discussed the airfield north of Stewart Air Base. We discussed the convergence of the planes from Logan over that airfield, and we discussed some of those facts last time we were on with me.
Yeah, we have. We've talked about Stewart Air Force Base and the security at Logan Airport, or the lack of security. Mm-hmm.
Well, what was the airfield's contract with? What Israeli company was working out of Logan?
That was a company called Huntley USA Corporation, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of a company formerly known as International Consultants on Targeted Security, or ICTS, which is a Mossad company based of, you know, Israelis who have had long careers in Israeli military intelligence, and they based their company for international providing security at airports. They're based out of Amsterdam in Holland.
Well, they are at Stubble Airport. They're also at Gatwick, from what I understand, and they have other airports in America, don't they, including the one that we're going to discuss today over in Cleveland?
Well, that's a good question about Cleveland. I haven't checked that, but they did provide security at Newark Airport and also at Boston Logan on 9/11. Mm-hmm. They provide security at a lot of airports. That's interesting. I haven't looked into that about the Cleveland Airport yet.
Well, what we do know is that there were some very strange strange behaviors of these aircraft that kind of converged over Stewart, and we're going to revisit this for a second because I'd like to use this particular anomaly to bring us into the next one. We had those Logan flights kind of crisscrossing over the Stewart Air Force Base, didn't we?
Yeah, they converged. Both 170 flight 175 and 11, the two planes that hit the World Trade Center, they converged over Stewart Air Force Base, former Stewart Air Force Base. Now it's Stewart International Airport, and it is the only privately owned airport in the United States. And this is only 60 miles north of the World Trade Center. So this is all within the New York metro area. And what may have happened is that these two planes, if we use the Operation Northwood scenario, these two planes may have landed at Stewart International Airport, which is in Westchester County, and drones may have taken taken up their flight paths and continued the flight to the World Trade Center.
Well, that's not a big leap of faith. And in fact, weren't there some people instrumental in the privatization from the Port Authority of the World Trade Center and the Stewart Air Force Base?
Very good.
Some of the same characters?
Very good point. Very good point. The person behind the privatization of the airport, the Stewart Air Force Base, and the World Trade Center, the architect of all this is Ronald Lauder. And he's a son of Estee Lauder, the big cosmetics company in New York, and he was a part. He was the director of the governor's privatization board, and he pushed for the privatization of the World Trade Center and of this airfield in the year 2000. And the airfield, the Stewart Air Force Base, was privatized earlier than the World Trade Center. As you know, the World Trade Center only became actually privately held property on July 26th of 2001.
Yeah.
And the person that was in charge of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey at the time was Louis Eisenberg. He's the former head of the United Jewish Appeal, and he is the person who oversaw the negotiations which delivered the lease, the 99-year lease, into the hands of Larry Silverstein.
Well, now, it's interesting to note that Mr. Silverstein, prior to his ownership of that building, was a strip bar owner over in Brooklyn of a place called Runway 99. Now, how a man goes from owning strip clubs to being in charge of several billion dollar building is anybody's guess, but I would say that there's a lot more to that story that we need to uncover. But
well, he was also named in a lawsuit in which Bill Clinton was also named regarding the smuggling of drugs into the United States, the whole MENA Arkansas drug smuggling ring. There was a lawsuit brought by, I think it was a former Marine, which was thrown out. But in this lawsuit, Larry Silverstein was named as being involved in this drug smuggling operation.
Well, no surprises there again. And now here's the interesting thing about Ron Lauder, including Mark Rich as well. Both of these men have been hovering around this deal, and both of them have a very close connection to Herzliya, where there's a university structure for preparing people to go into the Mossad, isn't there?
I think you would call it Mossad University. It's in Herzliya, which is where the Mossad has their headquarters, north of Tel Aviv, and it's called the Interdisciplinary Center, the IDC. And both, like you said, Mr. Rich and Ronald Lauder have donated funds to the school, and they have colleges or schools in their name. Ronald Lauder has a school for strategy and government, I think it is, and the Mark Rich has a school for financial transactions and misdemeanors and felonies.
Are you sure it's not a school for white slavery and drug peddling?
I think they certainly learn about all those things too.
Well, just a little tongue-in-cheek action there, Chris.
Yeah.
You can't serve me up a softball like that without me hitting at it.
Yeah, and the thing is that the head of the school, the dean of the school, is a former director of the Mossad, and it's clearly Mossad's place where they teach and they teach people how to do the things that they do.
Well, here's the interesting thing. A lot of people say the CIA is involved in all this, and CIA this, CIA that. What I've found over my time investigating this, the CIA pretty much is kind of gutted these days, and it's more of a paper pushing organization. What I found is most of these relationships that go back to the Mossad are done with the Department of Defense and the Pentagon, and you can see that with Feith and Libby and all the rest of them, and much of their planning, it seems, with the Mossad goes through that organization rather than the CIA. Am I correct in making that assumption?
Yeah, I think you're right. You're right, and also Department of State. And what's interesting is that what I have found, I mean, I've been researching 9/11 since it happened, and like on this recent story I did about Cleveland, I was just looking at the evidence and the people involved, and there suddenly popped up this key player who is a very, very high Zionist in the United States, a guy named Sam Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And he is actually the father of Aaron Miller, who was the senior policy advisor on the Middle East for four administrations at the Department of State. And he's the father of Aaron Miller. So, I mean, it's like it's a very small network of people. But what I have found at every critical juncture of 9/11, whether it's the investigation, the destruction of the evidence, the mysteries at Cleveland Airport, what have you, I eventually find that the person, the key person who was the gatekeeper or the person who made the key decision is a Zionist with close ties to Israel. Now, this is not a coincidence.
No, it's not a coincidence that some of the facilities were co-leased up in Stuart and co-leased over at Cleveland to government agencies. Am I wrong in saying that?
No, you're right. I mean, in Cleveland, you know, these two planes landed. One was reported to have been Flight 93, which supposedly crashed in Shanksville. But in this case, the reports are very clear that the passengers were taken off the plane and taken into the NASA facility. And this was when the entire airport had been shut down. And there in the NASA facility, these passengers were interrogated or interviewed by the FBI. Now, this doesn't make any sense. If this plane just had a bomb scare and they landed the plane at Cleveland just to get the people off the plane, why were they taken to a NASA facility and why were FBI agents waiting for them there? It doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, it doesn't. And I also understand that Stuart had something rather odd at the end of its runway that was rather a building that was rather clandestinely kind of installed over there, a big hangar bay.
Yeah, what's interesting about that airport, Stuart International Airport, which is owned by a British company that has its base in Texas, in Houston, I believe, that airport was privatized, like I said, in early 2000. But after it was privatized and turned over to a private company from Britain, Congress voted to give it millions and millions of dollars to build a new air traffic control system, a new control tower, and new hangars. And you have to ask yourself, what kind of privatization was this?
Well, it seems like a sweetheart of a deal to me.
Very much, yeah.
Well, you know, here's where we start going into the other workings here. This plane, supposedly, 93, was full of American citizens and foreign travelers. I don't know the passenger list. But from what I understand, if they were deplaned there, or if these passengers existed at all, they had to do something with them. And so, basically, either they did actually hit the building, which we have a lot of evidence that says that's questionable, or they had to get rid of these people after the fact. And this is a painful thought to even consider, isn't it?
Yeah. Very.
Well, I mean, so where does your evidence lead you? What do you got on this story?
Well, the thing is that the Cleveland Airport, Cleveland Hopkins Airport, was under the control of the mayor of Cleveland. His name was Michael White. And he's a black man who was under the control. This is all based on the reports from the Cleveland newspapers, because Mayor White, in the year 2005, his right-hand man, a guy named Nate Gray, his closest friend, his best man at two of his weddings, and his business associate, was convicted of 36 counts of bribery, racketeering, and things like that, involving activities in four different cities. Well, when Nate Gray was convicted, then it became clear to the people of Cleveland that Mayor White had headed the most corrupt administration in the history of Cleveland. Now, the thing is that this didn't happen by itself. This mayor became the mayor because of the financial support of Samuel Miller, who is the co-chairman of the company Forest City Enterprises, which is a huge real estate company. They, for example, they manage the housing projects where the U.S. Navy people live, like Great Lakes Naval Base, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And they own properties from the East Coast to the West Coast and all in between. Now, every week, Nate Gray, the man who was convicted of 36 counts of bribery, and the mayor, Mayor White, and Sam Miller, they would have dinner at a very fancy hotel in Cleveland. And in this trial, in this grand jury case, one of the co-defendants revealed that Gray told him that Sam Miller basically ran the mayor and ran the city. Now, this is important because they closed, the Mayor White closed Cleveland Airport, ordered it evacuated at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And all of the people were told that they had to leave but not take their cars. So these people had to walk out to the highway to try and get a taxi or get a ride to town to find a place to stay. And this meant that thousands of people were evacuated from the airport. And then at 10:45, one plane landed, And shortly later, another plane landed. These planes were both identified as having been sabotaged with bombs. The Associated Press reported that one of the planes was Flight 93. And what's interesting in this very short article from the Associated Press is that the spokesperson for United Airlines confirmed to the Associated Press that this was Flight 93. This plane was disembarked, and there are some as these stories become confused over the next period couple days, it appears that we're getting reports from two different planes. The other plane was Delta 1989, which notably came from Boston's Logan Airport. And the early reports from the newspapers in Dayton and Cleveland or in Akron, Ohio, indicate that the mayor said that the first plane landed and 200 people were taken off the plane. And these 200 people were taken into the NASA facility, or in another report, they were taken to the FAA facility. But in any case, we have what appear to be two planes landing at the airport. One's Flight 93, one's Delta 1989, and the people are offloaded and interrogated by FBI agents in a NASA facility.
Now, how does that square? I mean, there had to be people who survived these interrogations. Have any come forward?
There have been some reports online from some of the people who were on Delta 1989, I believe it is. And there are some reports, but again, these are somewhat anonymous reports, you know, where the names aren't given, things like that. So we don't have a lot of evidence as to what happened to these people, which is why I called up the mayor of Cleveland yesterday. Now, it's interesting that after this whole case went through and his business associate was convicted of 36 counts of bribery, the mayor, the former mayor, Mayor White, retired onto his 45-acre alpaca farm where he raises these llamas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in central Ohio, a few, you know, 60 miles, I think, south of Cleveland. And I called him up and I asked him, you know, if he could tell me anything to clarify these what happened at the airport, because he's the person, he's the source of the information in these articles that I was talking about. He gave a press conference, and he says, I'm no longer in the business of giving interviews, something to that effect. And he basically hung up the phone. So then I called up the Sam Miller, who was, you know, his supporter, and asked him what he knew about what happened at Cleveland Airport that day. And you know, this is a man who has enormous influence in the city of Cleveland. And he told me, he says, I don't know nothing about it. He doesn't know nothing about anything at the Cleveland Airport that day. And when I asked him, well, you know, can you tell me what kind of relationship you had with the mayor at that time? He said, what business is that of yours? And I told him, well, I'm a journalist. I'm looking into this. And he said, I don't know nothing about it. And he hung up the phone. So it's a very... And what's interesting about Sam Miller is that he is the father of Aaron Miller, who is a State Department official who has basically written, you know, the Oslo Accord and United States Middle Eastern policy for the last four administrations.
Well, here's where it gets interesting. Okay. Well, you also made a little visit to Shanksville.
Yes.
And you discussed what area residents saw that day, and there were some very strange discrepancies in the official story that you found. You want to go into some of those discoveries?
Yeah, very very much so. You know, the fundamental inconsistency with the official version is that at the crash site, the hole in the ground is only about 20 feet across, and it's about 5 or 6 feet deep. And I spoke to a woman who ran up to the smoking hole immediately after the explosion or whatever caused that hole. And she told me that it sounded like a tremendous explosion, like an atomic bomb, she even said. And she was working only a few hundred meters away when that happened. But when she ran up to the hole, which she said was about 20 feet across and 5 feet deep, she said there was no evidence of an airplane there. There was no pieces of anything. And this is the fundamental discrepancy. I mean, how can a large jetliner full of people and passengers and luggage, what have you, disappear into a 20-foot hole and leave no trace of itself behind?
Well, not only that, after the fact, they put armed, the FBI was on the site almost immediately.
Right.
And so was the FAA and the rest of them. I mean, they were they were already waiting for this crash to happen at that place, it seems. And what they did is they cordoned off the area and put armed guards there and allowed no rescuers to go and sift through the area.
And that's what Wally Miller said. You know, he was the coroner there, and the coroner is supposed to have, in the state of Pennsylvania, the coroner is supposed to have jurisdiction over the crash site or the death site. And he said that he stopped being a coroner after 10 minutes because there were no bodies there. And you know, this is the thing, is that this is a fundamental discrepancy, that there's no evidence. The FBI then told Wally Miller that, you know, they basically said, are you going to play ball with us or not? And he had to agree to turn over the site to the FBI. Now, this is important because whatever bodies they supposedly retrieved from this crash site, the local papers reported that they recovered, that they said that they had recovered 10% of the body parts and 90% of the plane. And these, from this 10% of the body parts that they supposedly recovered, these were all taken by the FBI to the Dover Air Force Base, where the DNA analysis was done, and they identified who these 40, and they identified all 40 people on the plane, supposedly, right?
Now, how could they do that without family DNA to match it to?
Well, what we understand is that the FBI went to the houses of the relatives and things and asked for DNA samples. That's the explanation, is that they obtained DNA evidence from the families.
Well, that's an investigation yet to happen, I'm sure.
Right. But the thing is that then they turned around and sent to Wally Miller as the coroner for Somerset County. They sent these 40 death certificates, which he signed off on. And I called him up because I know Wally Miller, and I said, you know, Wally, you this doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. You signed off on the death certificates of 40 individuals whose bodies you never saw. And when he became very upset with that, because it really he really did abdicate his authority to the FBI. And what's interesting is that both Wally Miller and the local paper, which never reported any of this, seem to have come into some money immediately after 9/11, because they both have made extensive renovations or built new buildings after 9/11. And this is a very small town. The Somerset Tribune, I think it's called, has a $2 million building, which they built in 2002 or 2003, and it only has a circulation of 14,000 readers. And this paper has never interviewed any of the eyewitnesses who saw these military planes flying around, or who heard these tremendous explosions. These people, like Lee Perbaugh and Lena Lenzbauer, were never interviewed by, or Sheila McElwain, I think is her name, the woman who saw the Thunderbolt plane, the A-10 Thunderbolt, screaming over her car before any explosion. So we have evidence of these military planes flying in circles, these close combat planes known as warthogs.
Yeah.
We have evidence of them flying around, eyewitnesses seeing these planes flying in circles around the crash site before any crash occurred or explosion. And this doesn't make any sense. But because this paper did not interview any of these witnesses, and there are scores of them, they apparently did the right thing and came into a lot of money.
Well, you know, and I'm sure along with the money, there were death threats. And now let's talk about the FBI for a minute here. It seems to be the police authority that is most corrupted in all of these investigations. If you go back to looking into Oklahoma City, if you go back and look at Bill Clinton's MENA, and you look at all of the machinations in Washington, D.C. over the last 20 years,
right.
It seems like the FBI is the one that is the most corrupted.
And there's no question about it, and I think that occurred at the top. You know, the Department of Justice has had a cabal of very powerful Zionists running it. Going back 30 years or so, I mean, there was Abraham Sofayer back in the Reagan administration time, I think it was, and during Bush father's period, and now we during the time of 9/11, we had Michael Chertoff at a key position, you know, in charge of the criminal division of the Department of Justice, and he is a dual national, an Israeli American, whose mother was one of the first Mossad agents in the state of Israel. So with those kind of people at the very top, you remember at 9/11 we had a brand new director of the FBI, brand new director, Mr. Mueller. And
that's
he was
right.
Only on the job for less than a week. And so when I checked into it, you know, and asked, well, who was making these decisions at the Department of Justice, you know, and guiding this investigation of 9/11, I was told it was Michael Chertoff.
Well, and you know, Michael Chertoff's also the gentleman that went up to upstate New York and got a pedophile charge sealed on Scott Ritter.
Right.
So I mean, you know, when we start looking around at this stuff, it's always the same faces or the people in the same group here.
Right. Now, and they keep popping up, and they're not, you know, they are not tied to the Vatican. They're not tied to the Opus Dei. I mean, all of the people that I have found are neither Jesuits nor Catholics. The people who are in the key position that I have found, like Michael Chertoff, like Sam Miller, like Alan Ratner, who was involved in the selling of the steel.
Like Gladine, like
they are Lord. they are on the contrary to being Jesuits, they are Zionists, and what we call warm Zionists or warm Jews. That is that they are active supporters of the State of Israel. Like Sam Miller, who I told you about, he is the national chairman of the United Jewish Appeal, which is the largest Zionist organization in the United States, collecting money and giving support to the State of Israel. And that Larry Silverstein, the leaseholder of the World Trade Center, was also in a former leadership position at the United Jewish Appeal, as was Louis Eisenberg, who oversaw the privatization of the World Trade Center, giving it. So what we find is we find Zionists, Jewish Zionists, at every key checkpoint, at every key juncture of the 9/11 saga.
And you'll find them in our investigative areas as
Michael
well.
Michael Chertoff.
Yeah.
Michael Chertoff's a good example. I mean, we had, you know, according to Carl Cameron, and also articles in American Free Press, going back long before, but we find that there were, in fact, at least 200 Israeli agents who had been involved in either eavesdropping, snooping on these 19 Arabs, or like the 60 movers who were involved in clearly having driven vans with explosives, with box cutters, and celebrating the collapse of the World Trade Center, videotaping, what have you, like the five guys arrested in Jersey City.
Right.
These people were all taken into custody and held, and even, you know, given lie detector tests, which they failed. And then, though, rather than being, you know, sent to Guantanamo or anything like that, they were sent back to Israel at taxpayers' expense on simple visa violations. While at the same time, Chertoff rounded up like 800 Muslim people and Arabs and said, here are your terrorist suspects. And it turned out, of course, that all of those 800 or 900 Arabs they rounded up were all let go, and they had no involvement in terrorism. So it's like
because Chertoff was also the chief investigator on the first World Trade Center bombing back in 1993.
Exactly, and that's the key point. Chertoff, I think he was a district attorney or attorney general in the state of New Jersey. Like you said, he managed and oversaw that legal process that resulted in which these Judas goats, these agents, these Zionist agents, and people who were in paid informants. I mean, I think his name was Ahmad Salem, was the FBI informant,
mm-hmm.
who was central to the entire 1993 bombing. He was paid $1 million by the FBI to be an informant. I mean, that's an incredible amount of money to give an Egyptian fella to play a role in a fake type bombing scenario. And what I think is that you know, there are books about this kind of thing, but the 1993 bombing and the Oklahoma City bombing, which the FBI was very closely involved in both, these were meant to sort of prime the pump for 9/11, so that Americans would get used to the idea that that terrorism is a fact of life and is a danger and a threat to them. So that when 9/11 happened, it didn't come out of the blue. They could say, well, look, this is what they finally made good on their threats.
That's right. That's right. Well, and I happen to know that there are other connections to this particular group and the Pentagon. And, of course, I've had Karen Kartowski, Lieutenant Colonel, on, where she said that Douglas Faith and Scooter Libby and the rest of these, and they are all diehard neocon Zionists. And I say neocon Zionists because I want to make the connection to what the mainstream press calls them and what we know them as.
Right.
The fact is, neocon Zionists were involved in the control of very important control points of this spy scandal here within the Pentagon there, Larry Franklin.
mm-hmm.
and this Franklin spy scandal. And, of course, these same names came up with the Pollard case. The point we're trying to make here is that the organs of control, power, and expression are either FBI, Pentagon, or Justice Department, and then the White House. And then, of course, when you want to look at acquiescing to all these crimes, we can start looking over at the Congress being bought and paid for and having political pressure made by B'nai B'rith ADL, by Southern Poverty Law, by the
right.
People for the American Way. All of these organizations
right.
place their pressures on Congress to either turn a blind eye or to participate.
And when you challenge that, like Senator Paul Wellstone from Minnesota, when you stand in the way of that bulldozer of the neocons, like he did, he was killed in a very mysterious plane crash in upstate Minnesota, and the FBI agents were apparently on their way to that crash site before his plane even crashed. They had driven up from the Twin Cities, and they were on the way while his plane was still in the air, as if they anticipated his crash.
Well, you know, and you can take a look at certain hot spots in the country for their control. Cleveland looks like one of them.
Absolutely.
Minnesota is another big hot spot for child pornography, child sex slavery,
yes.
as well as political Zionist control. You can take a look at Los Angeles area. You can take a look at Miami area and the New York region.
Absolutely.
And these are areas of the country that have been peppered with extortion and bribery and all kinds of control, so that they have a good home base to nest themselves in.
Absolutely, but what the real base they have is what they're in charge of, what I call, or some people have called, the concentration camp of the mind, and that is the media.
Yeah.
And in New York, it's particularly a tight media, screaming at the New Yorkers all kinds of nonsense and half truths and lies. But in the United States as a whole, the media is largely Zionist controlled. There are very few voices like yours that are able to break through through the cracks in that establishment. And this is why this what we call the fantasy version of 9/11, like this recent film United 93. These voices are the loudest. And this movie, you know, now it's only now 4 years after 9/11, but the mainstream media is now engaging itself in what the events of 9/11, and so we're getting mainstream what I call the mainstream 9/11 voices, and these mainstream 9/11 voices are being heard in the mainstream media on CNN, for example. But what these mainstream media voices do is they completely ignore the abundance of evidence that points to Israeli involvement in September 11th. What they point to instead is that they want to put all the attention on somebody like Bush and Cheney. You know, being a political year, they want to put the blame on the White House and say, well, you know, 9/11 was crafted in the Republican Party, so if we just have a change of party here and get the Democrats in, our troubles will be over.
That's right. That's right. And you know, Eric and I, we 5-6 weeks ago, 7 now, when Alex Jones came out with this Charlie Sheen nonsense, we knew right away what this was about. This was going to be a little show and tell for everybody that Charlie was going to come out, become a short period hero, be wonderfully received in a lot of communities around the country who are very angry,
mm-hmm.
and then they were going to pull the rug out from under his credibility.
Right.
And we saw this the day he came out, the day he came out. We wrote an article the following day,
mm-hmm.
and boy, if we were not proven absolutely spot on the money.
Right. And that's, I think that's what they call like a limited hangout type thing, that they let a little bit of the truth come out, and in the case of Charlie Sheen, like you said, they destroy his credibility afterwards. But this is what's going on with the whole 9/11 movement. It's they're gonna let a little bit of truth out in order to entice that huge percentage of the population that is absolutely demanding answers and enraged by the lack of truth coming out of 9/11. I mean, like on that Charlie Sheen thing, the numbers just on CNN viewers was something like 82% of the people believe that there was government complicity, what have you.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we can go back again now and talk to about the talking heads who are trying to muddy the waters with this nonsense about the Catholic Church. Now, I've said before on this program and talked to a lot of people about it, Christopher, you know, the Catholic Church is no lily white saint here. I mean, they've had their problems over the centuries, and the fact is that, you know, they've done some pretty incredible things to the world. However, to say that this is a powerful organization today, it belies the fact that I've looked into that most priests are in their 80s, 90s. Mm-hmm. It's a dying church. It's a shrinking church. It has lawsuits across America and the world. The facts are that this, you know, the last pope they had needed a dribble cup to keep himself, you know, from wetting himself. It was it was embarrassing to in the extreme. My point being is that this is an emasculated church for the most part, and not one that's in charge of leading conspiracies around the world and sending Jesuit assassins. And this is nonsense in the extreme.
And it's a church that's also very much under attack by the same Zionist media I was talking about before. I mean, all of these lawsuits and these cases that are being brought against Catholic priests. You know, I don't have to remind your readers or your listeners, but similar lawsuits could be brought against a number of rabbis and things, but never are. And it's not that the Catholic Church, like you said, has a monopoly on malfeasance or miscreants.
Well, now what we've got here is people like Phelps and Szymanski and others, and sadly, he works for your organization. I'm sorry, I don't want to be knocking one of your own reporters here, but this stuff is really painfully nonsensical. And hey,
he's an independent contractor, just like I am. I mean, I write and I submit my articles to American Free Press, but I'm an independent contractor. You know, we don't go through any sort of litmus test to write for that paper. And I have disagreed with a lot of stuff that I've read that he's written as well. You know, for example, this discussion of shootout in the Chicago subways when I was in Chicago and knew of nothing of the sort.
Yeah, we did that show when I did the Flacco Flambe. We flambéed him on the subway. The fact is, Chris, you know, when we look into all this stuff, there are people that are getting the right story. There are people getting the right information. But at the same time, we got the rug being pulled out from under the economy. And if you take a look today, we're up over 128.50 to the dollar on the euro exchange. Gold has risen to 7.30 and climbing. People are running from the dollar like cockroaches to a light bulb. And I'm starting to say to myself, you know, are we in the early stages of the full implosion? I mean, we've had the deterioration.
We the United States, as I've been saying for years, is being controlled by a crimocracy. And this is the people who, you know, they have corrupted our voting system so that we have no oversight of elections anymore. So this system of fraudulent voting brings into power these criminal networks. And that is where the control all begins. And when you have a crimocracy running the United States and waging illegal wars and allowing mass murder to happen in New York City without being properly investigated, I don't see how the country can prosper.
Here's the most powerful thing. There are precedents for their actions. I mean, look at the Liberty and look at how they squashed any investigation into the USS Liberty. Or take a look at the Levant affair. Of course, it was reported, but it didn't get any legs because the mainstream media certainly didn't latch onto that or the Liberty. It didn't latch onto the fact that Abu Nidal has direct ties to the Mossad. It doesn't latch on to a lot of the facts that we've been able to uncover over time. And the simple truth of the matter is it never will get traction unless we move away from the mainstream media and people start finding a separate source. Now,
exactly.
Of course, we're also under control on our internet. I mean, look, Murdoch's got my MySpace thing. I got a MySpace account with a few hundred people on it. But look at MSN. I mean, they can look into my emails if they want to, Christopher.
Right.
They can hear my phone call right now with Echelon. They know what we're doing. The fact is, we're controlled in every single communication means that they want to put on us.
That's right. And yeah, the computer has centralized all this to a, and that's a very good point you raised. You know, we've been writing, American Free Press has been writing for years about the way, not only the Inslaw case, but also the way that Amdocs, an Israeli company, handles all the billing for telephone calls in the United States. And you know, you have to ask yourself, why is this kind of communications data being outsourced to an Israeli company? And then, you know, what I found in this whole 9/11 investigation, what have you, and also from the voting thing, is that a company like Unisys, a huge company like Unisys, which provides the computer software and hardware for basically the entire U.S. government, they have been running Israeli security software. They have integrated Israeli security software coming from
What's the name of that? Give the name out.
The, Unisys is the main company.
Yeah, but it's called PTEC.
Checkpoint. PTEC is a different one out of Quincy, Massachusetts, involved in 9/11. But it's Checkpoint. Checkpoint Software, and that's out of Redwood City, California. But their main office is in Herzliya, Israel, or Tel Aviv. And it's a Mossad company. You see, what the Mossad does is they have venture capital, and they create these computer companies, software companies, often computer security companies, just like their airport security companies. Then they sell this. They set up a branch in the United States, and because of their network, they're able to penetrate the U.S. government at the highest level and get this software through Unisys. I mean, Unisys, the head of Unisys is a guy named Larry Weinbach, and he's a supporter of Israel. And he is the person who brought Checkpoint software and other Israeli software programs and software, and he integrated them into the Unisys software. So you can't even tell anymore because it's been integrated into the source code. And it's running on all the U.S. computers. So this is just, that's what I'm saying, is the centralization of communications, which the computer has enabled, has also allowed, you know, people and parties to be in the central position as master user to oversee everything that's going through the system.
Well, see, and it's interesting because we had a couple of talk show, radio show hosts say, oh, MySpace is controlled by the Zionists, by the criminal element. And I said to my listeners, wait a minute here. So is MSN Network, so is Yahoo, so all of them are. I mean, any network within the Internet structure is going to be monitored if they want it to be.
Right.
And MySpace is no better or worse than any other of the monitored systems.
Right. But the thing is that it's good that you talk about this because people have to, you know, get disabuse themselves of the idea that their communications through the Internet have any sort of security at all. They're completely, it's completely porous.
Yeah.
And well, has been for a long time.
That's right. And in fact, where we're heading now, Christopher, you know, here's my error that I used to make. I don't make it anymore.
Yeah.
It was predicting time frames. It's hard to know how quickly things are going to develop. I knew that this bird flu thing, by the way, I know full well it's a developed disease, not a natural occurring one, but
right.
I also know that it is killing animals in the animal world,
right.
And it's devastating. Farmers, rural farmers are being forced off their farms as a result of bankruptcy and problems. And here's the interesting thing. I knew that was coming. I made a few predictions. They were all badly timed, but they all came true.
Right.
Same thing with the financial implosion that I've been predicting. I know that the gold was going to go crazy a year and a half ago. I spoke to Eric. I said it was when I was at 400. I said, this thing's going through the roof, Eric. And you know, now it's at 728.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know these things are happening. I know, but it's hard to gauge the dating on it because, hey, America, 300 million people, it's hard to know how long it's going to take for this thing to just be a pile of rubble.
But the thing is that, you know, what I'm showing in a lot of my research is that it's a very, very small group of people that are behind this.
Yes.
And I think we can rest assured that it's not the Vatican, it's not the Jesuits.
Yeah.
And this very small group of Zionist agents is only able to do what they're doing because the mainstream media doesn't tell the people about them, so there's a general ignorance of their activities.
Right.
There's a general trusting of Zionists and Israelis because of the Holocaust saga, and that these people are generally unknown, but they're a very small group of people, and they're connected. And if we have public awareness, you know, if people realize what's going on here, and we really pin the tail on the donkey of who's behind the lies of 9/11 and who's really behind the attacks of 9/11, then we can basically prevent the continued destruction and you know, of this country, and we can straighten things out, because these people are not invulnerable. These people are not giants among sheep. This is all done basically by deception and fraud, through lies in the media. And when you know, this can be stopped.
Well, and this is why I keep going every day, because certainly I can't live under tyranny, and we are already have descended in it. But here's the interesting thing: the European governments are playing ball with the same group, and I, you know, how much power do they have to be able to span the globe? I mean, the French government has its problems. The Spanish government, the British government, my goodness, it's a mess.
Well, it's the money people. These are the, you know, it's the ancient story of the Jewish people, where they are in the positions as financiers of kings and queens, what have you, and royal families, and in that position, like in this country, the way they became, you know, we got the Federal Reserve System, and Congress lost the ability to, you know, to govern the printing and money. The handling of money in this country, and this is it. When you have these moneyed interests, like the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, what have you, these people have more power, enormous power over governments, and that's it. I mean, that's how. Look at what they're doing today in Palestine. You know, the United States and Israel and the European Union have decided to stop giving money to the Palestinian people. The Palestinian people are facing a health crisis. They don't have gasoline for their cars. They're being starved. They're being squeezed to death by these moneyed interests who will not give money. I mean, the state of Israel will not even give the Palestinians the tax money that the Israelis collect for the Palestinians. So they're squeezing them because they do not like this, you know, the Hamas government. And why don't they like the Hamas government? Because the Hamas government will not compromise on fundamental Palestinian rights, like the Palestinians' right to come back to their homes, what have you. And this is it. The power of the moneyed groups to control governments and events is enormous. That's
it. I believe we're going to, you know, I believe it may not be in my lifetime, but I know the seeds of truth have been sowed in on the French Connection and other. There's a minority of us, Christopher. I mean, come on, you've been around long enough to know there aren't a lot of Daryl Bradford Smiths around.
Very few. I don't know any. I only know one.
Yeah, well, me too. And sadly, I wish I had a chorus to sing in. And I find myself standing here screaming almost, you know, by myself. And I need more effort coming from people to enlist the support of grassroots people. This is a political movement we're in here.
That's very true.
This is not a radio show.
That's very true. It's a movement for truth. And that's, you know, I was just in Provo, Utah, where I was visiting Professor Jones, and he's doing the same thing. He gives presentations of his evidence at Brigham Young University there for professors and faculty to show them the evidence of what he has seen out of the 9/11 story. And he's asking them, you know, this just doesn't make any sense, gentlemen. You, as scientists, as academics, please look at this evidence and ask questions and help us. You see, and that's what we need. We need people like you and Eric Hushman, Professor Jones, who look at the evidence and are honest enough to pursue where that evidence leads us.
Well, you know, I had a conversation with Professor Jones, and you know, he had made an association with a group up in Minnesota that was frightening to me, because they were setting up bogus stories. I mean,
They made an association with him.
Yeah.
You see, I visited. I spent about 2 weeks there, and spent a lot of time with him. And what, you know, he is you could say he's a rather naive professor, but he's a physicist. But he spends most of his time in the ivory tower at Brigham Young University, and he's not at all a political person, but he's a scientist. And these other people, like you, are more politically motivated people who have attached themselves to his good research because they want to control the message. And they realize this guy has a very important message that they can't ignore. So they want to use him and his credibility to lift themselves up and to control the message. That's what that's all about.
Well, you know, I had a pretty long-standing relationship with Morgan Reynolds. And, I mean, you know, we're a first-name basis, and I was crushed to read this nonsense about blue screen technology that he put his name to.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, it crushed me. It took my legs out from under me, Christopher, because,
right.
you know, anybody with a brain knows that that's nonsense. Not only that, I mean, we've actually got photographs people had in their camera.
Sure.
That showed the planes. I mean, what did these people reach into someone's camera and put a blue screen plane in it?
Yeah, but,
there again,
you have to remember that Morgan Reynolds is not a scientist. I mean, he's an economist, and it came from the Labor Department. But people make mistakes, and hopefully, you know, the point is that if Morgan Reynolds or anybody else, you know, comes out with a theory like that, and then they're shown evidence that that theory cannot be true, then you would expect, if they're honest people, for them to come around.
Culpa.
Yeah, to come around and because, you know, I've written a lot of things about 9/11 too, and I've been wrong in the past, but you know, the thing is that none of us know exactly what happened yet, but as we look at the evidence, we're learning more and more every day.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's like saying, okay, you know, Martians came down and used a ray gun to take the buildings down. I mean, you know, that might be something you'd see on Rents, but I mean, I didn't expect Morgan Reynolds to go down that kind of road, and I was really crushed by it. And the fact was, 2 weeks earlier, I floated that with him because he had bounced this around
mm-hmm.
on a few sites, and I said, don't be going there with that because it's nonsense. Well, 2 weeks later, his name's on it, and I said, holy Moses, this is terrible. And I was crushed because, you know, I found him to be a responsible ally until this guy, Mr. Fetzer, got involved with him. Now, I don't know very much about this guy except to tell you there are a lot of things that have been going on with him that make me have the creeps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Eric and I have tried to put our finger on what this guy's got going on here, but, I mean, there have actually been people losing their lives around this man.
Yeah. Yeah. Like...
Well, I mean, and there's a lot more to that story than anybody really can sink their teeth into at the moment, and it happened to have happened in an area where these Zionists have an awful lot of control. If you take a look at Minnesota,
right.
and you take a look at the FBI up there, you'll find out that entire FBI group up there was in bad shape, real bad shape.
Right, and there again, you know, in like you said, the Twin Cities in Minnesota seems to be have some particular corruption because, you know, they, like I said, they killed Senator Paul Wellstone, who was a nice Jewish guy from Minnesota, and then they, you know, as soon as he was involved in a race at the time, with Norm Coleman, who's a New York-born Jewish fella who's very strongly Zionist. You know, remember, Norm Coleman is the one that had led the charges against
Galloway.
Yeah, Mr. Galloway from Scotland. And you know, Norm Coleman is involved in all kinds of what I would call Zionist nonsense. But in order to get Norm Coleman into power, they had to kill Paul Wellstone, because Paul Wellstone was very popular. But Paul Wellstone was very important because he was an anti-war voice, and he wanted an investigation of September 11th. And those are the kind of people that they have to get rid of.
Well, you know...
Most unfortunate.
Well, you know something, Chris, you know, every time we do a show together, we cover a lot of ground. It's a powerful interview, to be sure. And, you know, I don't shrink from the facts, and nor do you. It's a terrible burden to port around with us. I mean, because it's...
But it's very important. It's very important, you know, because there are people like Webster Tarpley, who I happen to know, and I've challenged him before. He's written all these books about 9/11, and I say, Mr. Tarpley, why is it that you never, ever, discuss the Israeli involvement? You know, the dancing Israelis and the 140 art students and the Israeli software, what have you? There's an abundance of evidence pointing to involvement by the Mossad, and he only laughs it off. But what's dangerous about his book is that his book about 9/11 has on the very top of the book, it says "Made in USA," and
right.
I said, "Come on, this was not made in the USA. It's not like a bunch of Republicans or Democrats or Army professionals planned 9/11 and killed 3,500 Americans in broad daylight in order so that they could, make some profit selling weapons or waging war. That is not who's behind this. There are certainly bad apples in all of these departments in the government, but it was not an American an American engineered an American plan to commit 9/11. It was not, because I have not found any evidence to prove this. The only thing that I can put my finger on definitely is that the President George W. Bush and his vice president obstructed and prevented an immediate blue ribbon investigation of the events of 9/11. And for that, I hold them responsible. That's facilitating the ignorance and cover up that have been perpetrated on the attack of 9/11. Mm-hmm. But you know, my evidence, as we talked about, my evidence and what I have found is that there are foreign powers behind the attacks of 9/11. And first and foremost, that appears to be the military intelligence apparatus of the State of Israel.
That's right. That's right, and it's exactly what I've been able to discover, and I find that there are actual spiritual elements to this that I found in the Shabbat Lubavitch,
right?
And I found people as high up in the financial system as well as Mort Zuckerman in the media with Eisner
the key players I would think in Israel would have to be Benjamin Netanyahu, who wrote
right.
his book back in 1986, something entitled "The War on Terror: How the West Can Win." In which he basically set down the blueprint that there has to be, that the Western democracies have to come and basically fight Israel's enemies for them in the name of Western civilization and democracy. This is pure rubbish. But this has been the Zionist plan, and the Balkanization of Iraq and the Balkanization of the Arab states has been an Israeli plan since at least 1982. And this is coming to fruition. This is what's happening today in Iraq. Now they're starting to talk about the partition of Iraq into three statelets, just like they did in Yugoslavia. Well, whose plan is this? It's a Zionist plan.
Yeah. Comes back all the way from the 80s. You're right.
Unless you want to stick your head in the ground and pretend that the Zionists don't do anything, is the only way you can ignore the enormous amount of evidence that points to Israeli involvement in 9/11.
Well, you know, Chris, we're going to do another show later at a later date when you get more information about another subject. But
okay.
It seems like we've covered a lot of ground today. There are still open ends on. There always will be. But we know the general story, Chris. And, you know, I want to thank you for the work you do. It's a tough slog these days, and Eric and I appreciate your efforts, and I want to let my listeners know, I completely agree with all the points that we made today. There's nothing that I'm in disagreement with, and I appreciate your efforts to bring this stuff out. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
For coming on
Merci
the
beaucoup. Et bonne nuit.
De rien, c'est important quand même. Hein?
Merci. Voilà. Bonne nuit. Bye bye.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, that was Christopher Bolin, American Free Press freelance writer for that newspaper. I hope you've learned something today, because this information cannot be ignored here. It's time that every person in the United States is shown this information. It's get Ben Friedman to them, get those files to them, wake people's eyes up, and then let them listen to what we just discussed here today, and you will be sure to have people jaw hitting their chest, shocked, and we can win this. They are a small group, as Christopher pointed out, and they can be defeated. Until the next broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith saying goodbye and be well. Bye-bye now.